So this, when was it? I think it was Friday. I woke up and I fell right back down after I woke up because everything seemed to be spinning. I had lost my just my stability, and then when I'm sitting down, I look around and everything is spinning. And I thought, wow, what is going on? And then I lie down, and finally things got back to normal. And this went on for quite a while, and eventually the doctor told me to take an ambulance and go straight to the emergency. I refused to take an ambulance. Karen got upset, and so did everybody at the emergency, I guess. But wow, it was just the strangest thing to be sitting down and just like everything is spinning. You know, it was like, wow, there's nothing stable. Anyways, this went on for about 6 hours, and eventually I think they thought it had to do with the fact that I had a flu and a cold. We're going to continue to read about the life of Joseph, and I tell you, there is absolutely nothing stable in his life at this stage. Nothing stable. You might say that everything is spinning right now in his life. He has just been sold as a slave by his brothers, and he's headed towards Egypt. He's a young man who has basically lost everything that is dear to him. He's lost his family, he's lost his friends, he's lost the familiarity of his surroundings and culture. He's lost his freedom. Everything important to him has been stripped away, including the clothes on his back. Everything is gone. And now he's on his way towards Egypt, and he's traveling with people. No doubt he can look in their faces, and there's no compassion there. There's no concern or care or understanding that he's a human being with dreams and with feelings. All he is an object, an object of profit. And he enters into this very harsh, very lonely world. And he has no idea what's going to happen to him. He has no idea who's going to buy him, what kind of life he's going to be leading. What awaits him. There is absolutely no stability in his life at this stage of the story. None. Now, some people have compared Joseph to Daniel, and it's interesting because they do have a lot in common, and Daniel was also taken into slavery. And it's said of Daniel that he resolved not to be defiled. He would not defile himself. It's as if he said, my goal is to be faithful to God, whatever the circumstances, whatever the challenges that come my way, I will just pray, God, keep me from falling. And really, you can imagine Joseph in his life praying that very prayer. God, all I have is you. I have no one else to turn to. Be with me, Lord. Protect me. Keep me from falling away. Can you see Joseph praying something like that? He's got nothing. Everything has been taken away from him. Now, I mentioned in chapter 37, where the story of Joseph begins, that the name of God doesn't appear once, yet in this chapter we are told over and over again, the Lord was with Joseph. Okay, we read that in verse 2, we read in verse 3, the master saw that the Lord was with Joseph. Later on, at the end of this chapter, verse 21, when he's in prison, it says, and the Lord was with Joseph. And then you see again in verse 23, and the Lord was with Joseph. All right, everything has fallen apart. He's at the bottom of the barrel. He's got nothing except the Lord is with him. That's all he has. The Lord is with Joseph. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean to say that the Lord is with Joseph? And I think it means three things, and I'm going to start with the letter P, all three of them. I believe that what this means is that Joseph experienced the presence of God, right? It wasn't just the theological belief that, you know, God is with us always. Joseph experienced the presence of God. I don't have freedom, I don't have finances, I don't have family, but God is with me, and the Lord would have let him know. He would have experienced that he was not alone. That's what it means. The Lord was with Joseph. He let him know that. His sweet, reassuring presence. He experienced it in his life. The second P is providence. And by providence, I mean that God his secret hand is making things happen. He's working behind the scenes, making things happen that would not otherwise have happened. He's letting his child know, I'm with you. And you know, God has a way of doing that. Sometimes you're just so discouraged, and somebody out of the blue just calls you, and they say, hey, you know, I was just thinking about you, and maybe they say an encouraging word to you, or maybe you know you're going through a really difficult time financially, and then somebody says, you know, the Lord put something on my heart, and I just want to give you this. And there's just so many different ways. But when that happens, you understand, wow, the Lord is with me. The Lord is making things happen in my life. And now, you know, you can see this as well, that God's goal, right, we're reading a little bit ahead, but God's goal is to have Joseph come into the presence of Pharaoh. He's got to bring him there. But how is the Lord going to pull this off? How is a slave like Joseph going to meet Pharaoh? Well, it starts off by there's a man by the name of Potiphar who happens to be the captain of Pharaoh's guard, and he's interested in buying and purchasing Joseph. Okay, this guy is really close to Pharaoh, and he's the one who ends up purchasing Joseph. Later in the story, Joseph gets put into prison. And what kind of prison is it? It's Pharaoh's prison, the king's prison, where many of the folk that are in that prison are people who knew Pharaoh. And so he's going to meet Pharaoh's baker and cupbearer. And it's not long after that it's going to be 2 years, but not long after that he's going to actually come before Pharaoh. So the Lord is doing stuff. Now, Joseph has no idea, but the Lord is with Joseph. He's making things happen. And he's working in people's hearts. You read this in verse 23. The Lord was with him, granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. The Lord is doing stuff in and around Joseph's life. And so he's working in these circumstances, moving Joseph ever closer to fulfilling God's plan for his life. So that's the second P. You know the Lord is with you, you know, when he begins to minister to you and does things, opens doors, lets you know you're not alone. And then the third is prosperity. And you see this in verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph and he prospered him. Some translations have, and he became a successful man. And you see this again in verse 3. The Lord was with him, and he gave him success in everything he did. And then in verse 23, the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. So we're told repeatedly that the Lord gave Joseph success. That was one of the ways that Joseph knew that the Lord was with him. In fact, even Potiphar knew that the Lord was with him because of the success. And this morning, I want to focus in primarily on this topic of success. It's a topic that I have not really addressed very much in my ministry. There are definitely groups that talk about the prosperity gospel, and it's a false gospel. It's a dangerous gospel. The idea that once you become a believer, you're guaranteed to become rich and become healthy, and if there should be any poverty in your life or sickness, that's a sign that you lack faith. I think that's a very serious error. But I want to look at a different side as well about success. The Bible is not always negative when it talks about success. And God gave success to Joseph, and I want to learn from Joseph's life about success. And really, I think where I would like to start, that we might have a proper Christian view about success, is that Joseph never, not once, do we read about this, never do we find Joseph saying or thinking that the goal in his life was to become successful. We never find that. Instead, really, the goal in his life was to be faithful and to be obedient to God. That was his goal. But in his case, it just so happens that success was very much in God's plan for his life. This chapter has much to teach us about employers and employees. And I want to look at that aspect of success as well. Now, we're not really told what was it that Potiphar saw in Joseph when he purchased him. You know, he was probably beaten and poor and who knows. But anyways, he purchased him. And regardless of what it was that he may have seen in him initially, in due time, he came to see what a gem he ended up purchasing. What a gem he got. No doubt he was thrilled with his buy, and I can see that he may very well have said, you know what, he's worth everything that I paid for him. I wondered, you know, I wonder if our employers would ever say that about us. He or she is worth every penny that we are paying, every dollar. There's no question about it that Potiphar certainly felt that way about Joseph. But what was it? What was it about Joseph? And that's what I want to look at. What was it about Joseph? First of all, he was naturally or supernaturally gifted. I've been watching and listening to a little girl from Norway, and her name is Angelina Jordan, and she won Norway's Got Talent when she was 7 years old. Just this little girl who doesn't wear shoes. There's a whole story behind it. And anyways, you know, she's this singer, and already at the age of seven, she shows this remarkable ability to sing jazz. And everybody who's listening to her, it's almost like she's this old soul and very, very gifted. And so everybody and anybody who has an ear for music and who's interested or an appreciation, I mean, they recognized her musical talent right away, and she's only 7 years old. And some of the judges were just saying, you know, you were meant to sing. Oh, God gave you such an incredible gift. And I think that throughout history, there are many examples. Mozart had a gift while he was very young to compose music. I think the first time he composed music, he was 5 years old. You know, there's athletes like Cristiano Ronaldo playing soccer, or Blaise Pascal in mathematics, and Picasso in art. And I grant you, there's these child prodigies, but the list is long. And as I was meditating on this story about Joseph, I began to see a pattern that everywhere Joseph went, people noticed something about him. Everywhere he went. And so Potiphar recognizes something in him. And by the way, what they all recognize in him is that he has this unique gift for leadership, for management, for administration. Every one of them, they all recognize this in him. Potiphar recognizes it, and when he starts serving, and right away he begins to give him more and more responsibility. You know, we read that when he goes to prison, the prison warden sees this ability in him and puts everything under his charge, under his care. So you have Potiphar who sees it. You have, the prison warden. You know, eventually he's going to come before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's going to listen to him. And not only does he have this gift to interpret dreams, but he's able to give wisdom, and Pharaoh just recognizes it in him right away and promotes him right there. I believe that his father also saw the gift of leadership that he had right from the very beginning. And that's why probably his father didn't send him out with the rest of his brothers to the field, because they said, this child has a gift of management, of leadership, and everywhere he goes, he seems to make things better and to bless people. And it's this God-given gift that is one of the building blocks of success in his life. There's a proverb, Proverb 18:16. A gift opens the way for the giver and ushers him into the presence of the great. Okay? This is part of why he became successful. We see that. A second characteristic that Potiphar noted was his work ethic. You know, a person can be really, really gifted, but be very lazy. And because of that character flaw, they might never be able to pursue where God wants them to be and where God wants them to go. And we read about this in Proverbs, you know, the sluggard. He loves to sleep. He wastes time and opportunities. He disappoints his employers. He does not finish what he starts. He needs somebody to prod him all the time. He likes to talk and to dream, but he never implements anything. And these are the folk, Proverbs says, that will never become successful. But Joseph, you know, he's got a good work ethic, and he works hard, he works smart, and he's rewarded for it. He had success in everything he did. He attended his duties. He had a good work ethic. Third was Joseph's ability to respect and honor those in leadership. And again, this is something that you see all throughout. He was very respectful of his father. When his father told him to do something, it seems that his response was, here am I, what do you want me to do? He works under the leadership of Potiphar. He works under the authority of the prison warden, and then he works under Pharaoh. In all these stories, Joseph was never first in command. He was always second. But you see that there was always this respect for leadership, and that those in leadership also respected him. There was this mutual respect going on, but he had a healthy respect for authority, a healthy ability to submit and to work under leaderships. And leaders really appreciate people who are loyal and know that they are respected and that their employees work hard. And that often leads to success. Pretty simple. He also has a very positive attitude. That's something else we see about Joseph. Joseph seems to be somebody who's very pleasant to be with, very pleasant to be around. And think about it, if anybody, you know, could be permitted to complain and to be negative and disillusioned with people, it would have been Joseph. And yet, throughout this story, we don't find any complaining spirit in him. He never seems to complain. He's a slave, but nevertheless, that doesn't stop him from doing his best under the circumstances that he's in. You know, Paul in Colossians wrote to slaves, and this may explain Joseph's success, but here's what Paul had to say. He says, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward." Joseph also has a very positive attitude towards adversity. Some of us, you know, we put our hand to the plow, and the minute there are problems, people problems, circumstance problems, whatever it is, we just give up. And yet we find in Joseph this person who just, he can encounter all this adversity, but he just kept going. You know, eventually he ends up in prison, and what does he do? He starts a prison ministry. He's like Chuck Colson, you know. That's how he approaches things. Really positive, everything he does. He doesn't let adversity stop him. And on this note about a positive attitude, I would say that he has a very positive theology or outlook. You know, this phrase that he says later on sums it up, I think. "You meant it unto me for evil, but God meant it unto me as good." That is a theology that can radically change the life and the viewpoints of especially people who've been victimized. Because if all you have is "you meant it unto me for evil," you look at people and you say, you know, that's all that there is, and you encounter this depravity. You encounter how awful people are, and you know that these people are in charge and they got power, and like life becomes hopeless. But when you have this second part, you know, "but God meant it unto me as good," it gives you hope. It helps you to rise above your circumstances, and it helps you to rise above the evil intent that other people have. And so this positive personality, this positive outlook, contributed to Joseph's success. By the way, I believe that God is the one who's working in his heart these characteristics. And I'll give one more. I think we see that he's a man of moral principle. He believed that some things were right, some things were wrong, and it was not about whether people were watching or not. He was a man of conviction. And again, you know, we've seen this throughout life, the media, history. You can be very gifted. You can be a genius in a particular area. You can be hardworking. But if you don't have a moral character and you don't practice integrity in the things that you do, everything can come crashing down. And Joseph succeeded in large part because he was a man with moral convictions. Now, I know he's going to get in trouble because of his morals, but we'll look at that next week. But in the meantime, this is what's going on. He utters these words, "How can I do such a wicked thing?" You get this sense that Potiphar, as far as his perception of Joseph, that he said, this guy will never steal from me. He's not going to lie to me. Like, I can trust him. I can trust him with everything that I have. You get this sense, you know, "Joseph, here are my keys. you know, Joseph, here's my bank account number. You know, here's the combination for my lock. Like, he entrusted everything to Joseph. It was his character. I can trust this guy. I had heard about an employer who got very angry at his secretary because he wanted her to lie and to say on the phone, my boss is not here right now. He's not in the office. He's out. And she refused to say that, and so he had to take the call, and he was pretty upset with her after. And she responded by saying, "Listen, boss, if I will not lie for you, you can be sure that I will never lie to you." My understanding was that she was eventually promoted as well. People in charge, employers, value people that they can trust. And Joseph was a man that could be trusted. So it wasn't just about giftedness and hard work. Joseph had integrity and moral character. So when you look at all these elements, you begin to understand how God was able to, use these various things in his life and how it led to success. You can see that. So again, I want to emphasize, the Bible is not anti-success. And in fact, I would say that if you follow some of these basic principles, that you may experience success in your life. Not always, but these are really good principles to learn. Now, the scriptures also tell us about the dangers of success. And I want to just make sure that we hear these as well. One of the dangers of success is idolatry. For many, success becomes an idol. It doesn't just take the place of God, it becomes God in their life. In other words, they think about success, they dream about success, they read about success, they obsess about success. Life is meaningless without success. And sometimes these people can even get very religious. And again, this is why I warn people about the health and wealth movement. That sometimes what people do is God becomes a kind of a means to an end. He's like a genie in the bottle, using God to get something, to get success. And so, people, "Lord, make me rich." Success can be very dangerous. Jesus warned people. He said, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul?" He said this about a very successful man. He said, "You fool, today your soul is required of you." People can be successful and not know God. Potiphar is a good example of that. But again, I emphasize, for Joseph, success is not the goal in his life. He does not want success at any price. And in fact, we read that he was willing to lose everything, everything that he had worked for, everything that he had gained. He was willing to lose it rather than sacrifice his moral convictions. Remember that movie, The Chariots of Fire? Eric Liddell wanted to win the race, for his country, for himself as well, but also for God. But then he had this conviction that would have been wrong for him to run on the Lord's day, and so he chose not to. He was the kind of person of moral integrity and character that said, even if it means lose, like, my life is not primarily about success, it's about obedience to God. And people have said, but you know, you've worked so hard to get to this point. And his point was, look, if this means disobeying God, I will not do it. I don't care how rich it would make me. I don't care how much stability it would give in my life. I will not sin against God. And this is Joseph's attitude. He will not. He will not. And he says it, how can I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And so Joseph, by his life, teaches us that, I mean, if it's a decision you got to make between being faithful to God and success of any kind, choose faithfulness to the Lord if it goes against doing what the Lord asks. The second danger is pride. Oh, I did this. I accomplished all this. I am smarter, better, wiser, more gifted, all in all. Remember that famous line by Muhammad Ali, it's hard to be humble when you're as good as I am. And when we read chapter 37, there was the possibility that maybe Joseph also was succumbing to pride. And God was going to have to work in his life. But pride is a great danger for people who've experienced success. You know, Paul says this to Timothy, command those who are rich not to be arrogant in this present world, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. But notice, it's like not to be arrogant in this present world. This can happen. And there's some really good antidotes to pride by just reminding yourself, you know, what is it that I have that I did not receive from the Lord? When you think of your Savior, Jesus, I mean, if he was humble, how could we, be proud? Be mindful of this danger, pride. The third danger, I would say, of success is envy on the one hand and flattery on the other. Martin Luther used to pray this prayer, O Lord, deliver me from my enemies and from my friends. He saw that both had traps, both this envy of others and hatred of others, but also the applause that many were willing to give. And when we become successful people, others become envious. I don't know how many of you saw the movie Amadeus, Mozart. There was another musician who all his life, that's what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a court musician, the best around. And then this little jerk of a guy, that's how he was portrayed, you know, comes into the palace and at such a young age, I mean, his music is just perfect. And it drove this guy with envy to madness. So filled with envy, and eventually, you know, he tries to bring him down. And you see this with Joseph's brothers. They hated him, again, out of envy. When you become successful, you will very often displace other people from their position, and they will be upset with you. You think of David, how he displaced Saul, and Saul got incredibly envious and wanted to get rid of David. Or when Daniel was promoted, others were jealous and planned to get rid of him. So remember that. Success brings that. And as I said, the flip side is flattery, where people are just so afraid to say anything to you that might get you upset. The applause is always there, and it can get to your head. And it's so important that people just remember that the good in my life, the success in my life comes from the Lord. And that's why it's interesting to read that Potiphar in verse 3 was convinced that Joseph's success was not reducible simply to Joseph's human ingenuity or giftedness, but to God. How did he know that? I think the only explanation is that Joseph would constantly say, oh, it's because of what the Lord is doing in my life. my God, Jehovah. And Potiphar came to believe that this was his God doing this. And another danger of success is the illusion of permanency and security. And my goodness, Joseph would come to see that in his life when he was his father's favorite son. It wasn't long before he realized that he was, in the pit. One day he's second in command in Potiphar's house, and then he finds himself in prison with absolutely nothing. Yeah, there's no guarantee. There's no permanent security in earthly success or earthly power or earthly fame. Our greatest security is in Christ, who promises never to leave us or forsake us. And the last one that I want to just bring out, the success often brings with it new and powerful temptations. And again, don't be naive. Successful people will be exposed to greater temptations. And make no mistake that when they are exposed to them and if they fall, it can destroy them. And we have seen this over and over and over again. In this particular story, it's about sexual temptation and infidelity. And it's one of the great, if not the greatest, temptation for people who have success in their life. My sense is that it's dangerous for people to receive or experience success too quickly in their life. They might not be ready for it. What you realize in Joseph, and Joseph was in Potiphar's house for 11 years, so this is coming almost in the 11th year of his stay at Potiphar's house. But God had been working in his life and working in his character, working in his giftedness and all the rest. But some people, they've got the giftedness, they're thrown into these places of fame and success, and they don't have the character to be able to handle the pressure there. So there's a real danger of temptations. Here's one man, Proverbs 30. There's a prayer, a wise man. He says, "Two things I ask of you, O Lord. Don't refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me, and then give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much and disown you, and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal, and so dishonor the name of my God." So here's a wise man saying, know yourself, know your enemy, know your limits. Successful people do well to spend time in the presence of God. Make sure that your spiritual life is in alignment. Have accountability partners. Remember, success is a wonderful thing when God gives it to you, but it's got all these dangers. Just want to say one more thing here. What was the purpose of this success? And I want you to look at verse 5. It says, "From the time Potiphar put Joseph in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. And the blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field." This is a fascinating point, that Joseph's success was about making other people successful. He made Potiphar, who was a pagan, an Egyptian, more successful than Potiphar had ever been before. And he's going to do the same with Pharaoh, make him more successful than he was before. I have no doubt that he probably did this for his father, that his father realized that he was becoming more successful as he allowed Joseph the ability to exercise his gift. And so over and over again, you see this, that his success in life was always tied in making other people more successful. His success in life was all about blessing other people and to become a blessing to others. Wow. You know, I knew this woman in Montreal. She was one of the most hospitable women that I knew. But she had this really, really tiny apartment. And whenever she invited people over, it was almost like being in a can of sardines. I mean, it was just so tight. And I remember her praying and just asking the Lord, and, you know, Lord, I wish I had a bigger place that I may serve more people. That was her desire. Her bigger house, which would have been a sign of success, was really about her desire to bless other people. And the Lord gave her that. That's a very different perspective on success than simply the individual that says, I want bigger barns and bigger barns and bigger barns so that I could say to my soul, relax, enjoy, have a good time. It's radically different. And I think, you know, true biblical success is when we are called to be a blessing and to take what we have and bless others. And, using success in a godly manner means being a blessing to others. Make me a blessing to someone today.